Welcome to another episode of Roll or Die. On this show, we like to bring you all people from the jiu-jitsu scene, and we like to bring you the up-and-comers. This guy is definitely one of those. If you've been sleeping for a while and you haven't been following the competition circuit in Australia, then you might have missed him. But for people that do follow, this guy has been tearing it up through the last couple of years. He has been winning all over Australia. He's traveled all over the world. He is a brown belt. He's my new teammate, and here's Ivan Domlik. Thanks for joining us, Ivan.
That was a very nice intro, Kim. Thank you for that.
It was a very nice intro. Man, I feel like you've grown up in jiu-jitsu in the shadow of one of the greatest, Lincoln Hancock. Is that fair to say? Like, there's no one else for you, is there? Like, he's your main man, right?
Link's the man. I started training as a kid, but when I first trained with Link at about 19, that's when I considered to myself that I started training jiu-jitsu. He's the one who inspired me, and he was the one who made me fall in love with jiu-jitsu. And that's not an easy thing. He's taught me that that's really important as a coach, and he did that for me.
Brilliant, man. Love it.
So you were already doing jiu-jitsu somewhere else. We usually ask this of our guests, but like, how did you get started in jiu-jitsu? Tell us about your journey.
Would have been about 10 or 11. We had a friend across the road who did some jiu-jitsu, and they took us to a club called FAFC. You guys have heard of that?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, FAFC, Glenroy. They're still operating. They're actually amazing at Kyokushin Karate, and they had a small jiu-jitsu program, and that's kind of where I started. But being a kid, I wanted to play footy. I wanted to play soccer. So it was all kind of mumble-jumbled up, and then throughout my early teens, I'd say I probably got a couple of months training in, mostly like in the footy off season. But I never felt as if that was my thing, you know, like I never went all in on jiu-jitsu at that point. And then I'd say I probably took about 4 or 5 years off, really focused on school and playing footy. And then it was only to, I think, 2017, when I was about 19, that I decided I want to do some jiu-jitsu again. I'd missed it. I hadn't done any sports for a bunch of years, and I felt as if something was missing, and something told me that jiu-jitsu was missing. And so I found Dominic.
Sorry, go on. Yeah, you're going.
Yeah.
Yeah, was that like I wonder what pulled you to an individual sport instead of a team sport when, you know, you hadn't been attracted to it in the past? Like, what do you think was the attraction?
A good question, man. I don't even think it was that, but on that point, it's probably pretty important. Hey, like, I was playing footy and I loved the idea of a team sport, the camaraderie, the training together, improving together, winning together, losing together. That was all amazing. And then it came toward the end of my final season. It was under 16s and we'd made the grand final. And I'm a natural competitor. I want to win. And it was the grand final. And I do recall one like key moment for me. It was halftime and my team were kind of joking around. Like, we were down by a couple of goals. The team was amazing. And they kind of let it go. They'd conceded defeat at halftime, and it broke my heart, and I was pretty angry for the rest of the game. We lost pretty considerably, and I felt let down. I actually told my dad after that match, I'm like, Dad, no more footy. No,
I'm done. Interesting.
So, yeah, I guess it is individual. You rely on yourself. You rely on your skills when you're competing, but I don't think it's as individual as many people would assume. I think
what you were saying before, I feel that team thing is actually entirely what is jiu-jitsu. Like, you might go out there and compete by yourself, but you actually still need your team behind you, like in training and stuff like that. to be able to get there.
I mean, if your training partners aren't supporting you in training, you never get there. You never even get close. I mean,
yeah.
If you only have one training partners and they're not there for you, you're never going to make it, let alone zero. Not to mention, Link's done so much for me. It's unbelievable. We could do 7 podcasts on just how much Link supported me.
Absolutely. I know the feeling. Link's been in my life as well, and I've had the Link love. It is amazing. It's something special. So, yeah, you guys are well and truly above and beyond the call, man. And I think, like, if you weigh up how much time you spend competing versus training, like, the competing is such a small element of it that is probably individual, even though, I mean, I think that the cornering aspect of jiu-jitsu in a comp situation makes it a team sport. Like, a good corner person who knows you and knows them, they're as important as the player who's out there competing, in my view, because that makes all the difference, right? The right coaching from the sidelines.
Without a doubt, even just noise, like even just a or you know, everyone screaming, whoa, you're about to get the pass, whatnot.
Mm.
That's so helpful. It's like feeling your team in the corner is amazing. I like that was my first super fight when I walked out of Boa. Like hearing the scream of my team, I felt untouchable. I'm not alone up there. Like I felt that, and that's a powerful thing. So, like we call it an individual sport for sure, but yeah, without the team, you are no one. That's for sure.
Maybe we should stop calling it an individual sport. Maybe we're discovering that now. Maybe it's like no one. I did this team sport thing called jiu-jitsu. Have you heard of it?
Yeah. Another point too is like how many people stay in jiu-jitsu for themselves? I'm not sure how many.
Yeah.
I think like the main driver to go to the gym most days is to see your friends, to see your community, like your tribe, your people.
Mm.
I think it's one of the strongest pulls towards jiu-jitsu. Yeah. Maybe I want to go and build confidence and get fit and get healthy, but after a while, once you're a member of the team and a really strong team, that's my experience. Anyway.
Yes,
yeah. The culture is unmatched.
Yeah, 100%.
That's like most of the time. Yeah,
right.
You're there for your team.
So you say you pretty much essentially started in 2017, and so in just over 6 years, you've got to brown belt. Like, how did you do that? Like, that's pretty quick, yeah? Especially at dominance, that ain't great easy. You know, they don't give out the belts for nothing.
Not Dave and not Link, that's for sure. I've never really focused on getting the next belt. For me, it was all just about getting to a level that can wear the belt. And then because I compete so much, it's getting to the level where I can not only compete at that belt but win at that belt. The belt decision is all up to Link when he says it's time. So for me, it's get as good as possible, as fast as possible, and whatever belt I'm wearing, so be it, you know. Yes, a white belt, I really wanted to wear a blue belt because I didn't want to be a white belt anymore, you know.
Yeah.
It was so difficult telling my friends and my family that I'm doing jiu-jitsu. This is what I'm going to do. I love it. I compete in it. And then you get the question, oh, how are you going? What belt are you? White belt. It's like, yeah. that wasn't fun. But once I got the blue belt, after that, it was, you know, Link will decide and I'll do what I can. In terms of getting better faster, I attribute it mostly to Link and my team and then me just showing up being in that environment, to be honest.
Mm.
I try to be as coachable as possible. In that, whatever input I get, I try to take it on board as much as I can. I know sometimes that I don't, that's for sure. But from the beginning, I try to prioritize being as coachable as possible, as consistent as possible, and then just giving everything that I have, you know, try to finish every week with an empty tank and continue moving forward. And then I guess, yeah, when you look back at 7 years, it's gone pretty quick. I'm a brown belt now, but I still feel like there's holes everywhere. I need to be so much better. There's been performances that should have been better. Yeah, I don't feel like I've done a lot, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, you're right. It's a small window of experience. Like you've got the belt, but you don't have the experience in some ways that comes with getting the belt slower. So there is a cost and a payoff to both of those things, which is neither bad nor wrong. Like Because one of the things I've been observing and thinking about lately is like coaches in almost every club have their favorite peeps. Like parents kind of have their favorite kids, you know, and they're never going to admit it. But it's not.
Yeah, but it swaps around that, Anton. It doesn't always stay the same.
Yeah, that's
true. Depends on the behavior.
That's true. But but I think also like you would definitely be a favorite because of all of the things that you just listed, like Link's going to love hearing, you know, love like knowing that you're going to show up, you're going to compete, you're going to give it everything, you're going to have nothing left in the tank. And then there's going to be someone else in the club who's kind of going slow and they're not going to get their belts and they're going to be overlooked because the attention's on the performers, right? And this is not a bad, this is in every club, I think, almost every club at least. But the cost and the payoff, like the cost is that, yeah, you go real fast because you're in the spotlight and they're going to give you a lot of attention. But there will be moments where it's just you've maybe gone too far too fast. And as you say, it feels like there's holes. And how do you deal with like those? Do you ever have this kind of like imposter feeling almost because it's going so fast, or do you not experience that at all?
Imposter syndrome has been with me since the beginning. That's without it. in my training as a competitor. As a coach, it's big. I'm fighting it all the time. But I guess yes, there's been 7 years, which is fast relative to most people, no doubt about it. But I've fit in a lot of experience in that time. Like I've done 50 matches. Like I've jammed it in. This is all I do. I don't do anything else. So I guess there's like if you speak to Link, there's no way I got the belts early. I wouldn't say they were late either. They were just about right. I guess when I say that there's holes, I just mean that I'm always in pursuit to fill those gaps. And the gaps are always there.
Yeah.
Even if you pause for a moment in time, jiu-jitsu gets better. It evolves. And if you're not catching up, there's another gap. You got to plug it. And so I feel like I'm constantly in that race. And I hope to feel that way forever until you know, I kick it.
Awesome, man. I love it.
And so you do compete a lot, like 150 matches. That's a lot in a pretty short amount of time.
Yeah.
What's your, I suppose, mental preparation going in either like on the day of or in the hour or so before you compete? How do you prepare?
Yeah. So mental prep for me is probably the most important thing because training remains the same. I try to train exactly the same. I don't want to add too much stimulus or load before a competition. But I just want to get my head right. So I think what I've learned for the past couple of years at least is the night before for me is pretty important because your head can go one of two ways for me in particular. Is you can get overexcited. You can get really G'd up. I can sit there watching Marcelo Garcia highlights until 1 o'clock in the morning and get nice. And then, you know, I envision me performing that way. Or I can kind of like turn off completely. And then when the moment arises that it's time to compete, it's almost like I haven't done my mental prep work and it's time to feel the now. So I've gone both ways. Neither are optimal. What seems to work well for me is I just open up my notes app on my phone or get a notepad and I just like write down some thoughts on the comp. And then I just set a couple of goals that I try to make separate from the results, if that makes sense. I've got to make some goals. And so generally that would look like, I don't know, test my A game and get to my A game. So for example, let's say that at the competition, I want to get to close guard. I like to use close guard in competition. So I would be able to tick off, get to close guard and test my close guard without actually winning the match. And so for me, that's really important because now I can tick off a goal and have achieved something without the need to win. And so for me, that was a big game changer because I don't need to convince myself that I want to win, if that makes sense. Like I'm not the type of guy that doesn't care if he wins or loses. Like I want to win. That to me is innate. I'm always going to be like that. But tying the result of the competition to how I feel and to how I went and to whether or not the competition was successful or not could be and was for a lot of times pretty detrimental to my performance because you have that nervous energy as to how you're going to go. Am I going to finish on top of the podium? Where am I going to fit? Am I going to get submitted? Am I going to perform well? Whatever. But the moment I was able to kind of set a clear list of goals or missions to achieve without the result, I felt I could just focus on that. And the goals change every comp. Like every time it's an easy one to write down, like get the A game because that's what you're going to do well. Sometimes it's just focus on the next match as opposed to match 3, 4, 5, 6, who you're going to have in the semifinals and finals. Sometimes, honestly, it's just test a new part of the game. If I'm at a grappling and shoots or a local comp, sometimes it's just have fun, enjoy the process, you know, don't let the nerves get to you too much and enjoy. So that way I feel like writing that down the night before and having those goals set mean that every time I do get a little bit nervous or I'm feeling that nervous energy build up, it's like, nah, go back to the goals we set last night and sail through. Have faith in the preparation that you always put in and focus on that. Because if I focus on that and I can tick off those goals without them being results focused, it means that regardless, I can walk away on the day, lose first round, you know, no one ever wants to do, but still have a positive and improving competition.
That's super powerful, man. Like, I love the idea of, in fact, I think the show could end up being named as far as a tagline, achieve something without the need to win, you know, and setting those goals. I don't think anybody's spoken about that in the past as far as a pre-comp strategy, and I just love it, man. It's like it just takes away from the nerves that come with, am I going to medal? Am I going to be embarrassed? Am I going to get submitted? All of these things. It's like, no, just set a goal. Like, okay, I want to get a hold of a foot. You know, I want to get a takedown, yeah, whatever it might be. Yeah, absolutely, man. That's so powerful. What about, you also touched on, you said that there were times where your performance was not optimal and then you took on this strategy. And I do, while we try to obviously keep the show always fun and engaging and positive, I love to kind of go down the rabbit hole of some of the more, you know, interesting, darker aspects. So, like, did you ever struggle competing, or were you just one of those people who just kicks ass from day one? Did you have a really bad patch and you're like, maybe competing's not for me? What was your, what's the track record of competing been like across the 150?
So many bad experiences. I've taken my fair share of beatings. Don't worry about that, man.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, that makes me feel better. I do go on.
I do recall my first blue belt competition. I went to the competition and I'm super nervous, right? Because I haven't figured out all this stuff in my head yet. It's my first blue belt comp. What do I expect? These guys are obviously amazing and infinitely better than white belts. You get all these ideas in your head. And so I pull guard and I'm playing collar sleeve and the guy picks me up off of the footlock, right? And I've got my grips and I've let my grips go out of panic. And he's lifted me up off the ground via the footlock and I'm floating in the air whilst being footlocked in the same time. And so I tap, obviously. There's like, whatever, you get tapped in competition, but there's a photo of it. And speaking back to teammates, and both of my teammates are looking on and they've got their hands on their head like this. And then my other teammate was like hands like covering his eyes, like didn't want it to happen. And then a bunch of in the background, like their hands on. Like it was just the absolute demolition. So I call that photo first image, but there's been a million of them.
Wow.
I've lost countless times, like in the big shows, the smaller events, guys that I've beaten before handedly lose. I think if you compete enough, you're going to get found out in the holes that you have.
Mm.
And also, performance can never be at 100%, 100% of the time. So when it slips, someone's going to be there waiting to catch it, you know?
Yeah.
That's happened. And we joke, like I like joking about that because it makes whatever is coming a little bit easier to handle because you know that have a bad performance and you move forward and you just try to make the next one better. But yeah, there's been a million of those, man. Worlds this year was a big negative one for me, losing in the second round. That to me is still difficult to deal with. I had a bunch of people tell me I dealt with that really well, but honestly, that's still difficult because it meant so much to me. Worlds means everything. Like you build the year around it. It didn't go my way. That still hurts, but it fuels me, you know, like the background on my phone is a picture of Worlds. And that's my goal. That's my dream. And to fail there hurts, but man, I'll be there again this year.
Love it.
What is next for you, Ivan? What's coming up this year? What's the plan?
AJP's next. That's in Sydney. That's in a couple of weeks. I've got a really tough bracket, to be honest. I've got Wesley Pacheco from Pacheco BJJ in New South Wales. And then I've got Ethan Cannon, who, again, another amazing competitor and athlete. Wesley, I've faced a couple of times at Blue Belt. We went back and forth. But then he got promoted earlier than I did and spent all his time at Purple Belt while I was at Blue. And then by the time I got to Purple, he was already at Brown Belt. So we didn't get to compete. And then Ethan, I faced at Pampax last year. Had a really close match, honestly. Didn't think I would go that well against him because he'd been a brown belt and he'd been dominating brown belt for so long within Australia. I know he's been to Worlds and done well there as well. So that match was 0-0. Ended up going to a ref's decision. And I felt really good in the match. I felt even. So I'm keen to go again. I'm keen to see how well I've developed and improved since Pampax of last year. And then I want to make that division mine within Australia, and then I want to make that division mine internationally as well.
Mm. Do you, when you're...
Are you going back to Worlds? Sorry, Anton. Yeah. Back again this year?
Yeah, the flight's booked. I try to book the flight as early as I can, so it's locked in. I told myself that once I commit to jiu-jitsu that I'll compete at the World Championships every single year until I'm done. Mm. And so that's what I'm going to do. But, yeah, Worlds is booked. We'll sort out the finer details and whatnot with the team. And all of that, but yeah, that's locked in. So everything for me now is just filling in the space from now until Worlds. Try to get at least one or two competitions a month, sharpen up, get some momentum, and then I'll do I think about a 2.5-3 week training camp at Artois beforehand, and then give Worlds another crack.
What's the relationship with you and Link like as far as your competition strategy? Like, is he, do you and him like review tape, talk about your competitions? Do you talk about competitions after the comp, or do you do prep work talking about the specific competitors that you have? Like, what, you guys are pretty tight, obviously. What's that relationship look like?
Yeah, Link's family to me. I owe him for the rest of my life. He's helped me in every single way possible, but on that specifically in competitions, he does help me a lot. We prepare for individual opponents. We study tape separately and come together and share ideas. Not to the point where you could write a thesis on each opponent, because I think that can honestly be detrimental as well. Just knowing exactly what they're really good at, so basically what you want to avoid, how they open the match. So their opening move is really important to us, because that's somewhere where we can get an edge and pull them to our best game instead of theirs. And then the most important one is, how does our game fit into theirs? So he's going to give me ideas on every particular opponent. And then we move forward like that. On competition day, I've tried to build the skill, and I'm very good at it now, of shutting out every single bit of sound except for Link's voice.
Mm.
And honestly, there's been matches where I just go blank and listen to him, and whatever he says, my brain, there's no buffer. It's like there's no middle.
That's awesome. Wow.
I just react.
How did you do that, Ivan? Because I know that that's a big problem for a lot of competitors. They get a bit overwhelmed in the moment. Do you have any advice on what people can do to get that happy?
One, don't just listen to your coach only on competition day. Listen to them all the time.
Mm.
So much of performance is at a subconscious level. And if I'm listening to Link every single day and I take everything on board, absolutely 100% of the time, on competition day when we go blank, my brain will listen. That's the first one. The second one is reps. If you don't have an extensive amount of matches under your belt, when the competition comes, you're not going to be that sharp. You're not going to be that skilled in those areas. And I've had a bunch, and Link's been in my corner for every single one of my matches ever, and given everything that he's got to help me coach it through. So that relationship is built, and it's both parties need to buy in. And then once that happens, it's do it a lot. And once you do it a lot, that's going to be built. That's going to be set.
Mm. I like it, man. How are you at cornering people? I know that we're kind of getting towards the end of the show here, but one of the things I've found lately is, like, if I try to, like, cornering is a completely separate skill, right? Like, it's one thing to shut people out and listen to them, but how are you when it's your turn to corner people? Do you find yourself strong in that area?
I enjoy cornering a lot.
Okay.
I enjoy coaching a lot, like setting up the strategy for a particular match. And I think I'm pretty good at it too. It's difficult because you don't want to overstimulate the athlete. Mm. You can sit there and kind of scream at them constantly throughout the entire match.
Yeah.
And that's almost much input, right? Sometimes you can get a little bit overexcited and scream a bit too much when they're passing. Sometimes you can say not enough. So that's going to change every time depending on the athlete. But it's fun, man. I have a ball. Because you're so emotionally invested into who's out there. So you kind of win and lose with them. But I think what's important is knowing exactly what their best game is and then kind of guide them in getting there.
Mm-hmm.
And then obviously when things go bad or not so well, just letting them know that we're going to get out, we're going to deal with it, and we're getting back to our spot. So it's like wherever we are, match, just make sure they're focused on the position they need to get to.
Amazing. The reason I asked this, right, is because I found a white belt the other day who corners people way better than me. Like a white belt corners people like a magical human being. Like I'm like, I would like you cornering me. And I'm like, how is this even possible? And obviously, yeah. Like what you're saying, I'm going to add that into my repertoire right now. I'm going to take, I need to develop my cornering skills. That's an area of my game. Now, as a team player playing team jiu-jitsu, I'm a bad teammate if it's my job to corner you. So,
well, it's funny because when I coach Theo, he says exactly what you said, Ivan, that he can only hear my voice, that he can't actually hear anyone else. So he must be doing, maybe just because he's so used to listening to me talk all the time as well.
So good.
I never stop talking to him.
That's so good.
We're nearly out of time, Ivan, but do you have any final words, any words of wisdom for our listeners? Don't be shy. I think that, you know, you've achieved so much in such a short amount of time. You definitely have a lot of advice that you could give.
Yeah. First of all, thank you guys for having me on. I appreciate it. I honestly didn't feel like I did have a lot. That's some of the imposter syndrome coming back. Advice that I'd have to give is just enjoy jiu-jitsu and remember why you did it and remember why you still do it. Don't just be there for yourself. Invest into your team and invest into your training partners because they're the ones that are going to help you get to the next level. And make sure that every time that you can add to the culture on the mat, do it. You know, make sure that the environment that you're spending time in is as good as it could possibly be for you, but also for everyone else. And I think all of us have a job on the mat to make sure that our team are safe and happy and having a good time and that the culture is set for everyone.
That's very similar to what John Will, who we just had on our last episode, said. So
he could be your grandfather. He could be your grandfather, brother. So that's the thing. That's it. They're wise words coming from you, man.
Yeah. There you go. That's the lineage right there. Coming through. Fantastic. So yeah, thank you so much again for giving up your time. Really appreciate this. We'll probably, I don't think we'll actually have this one out until after the AJP. But good luck with that. So if you could share it on your social media, that will really help to grow our little audience. And once I can actually say, yes, I will see you on the mats. I see you very normally. I say that it's just like whatever. But with you, I'm definitely going to see you. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you, Anton.
All right. Thanks a lot. Thank you.
Cheers, guys.
Bye.